this week on the Pre-Health Podcast at Penn State. We are so thrilled to welcome a guest from the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine to talk about their school, its curriculum, the Oakland community, and what students can expect if they're looking to be a Pitt Med student. This is a really exciting opportunity for us. I think a really exciting opportunity for our students, especially those that were hoping to connect with Pitt Med at our Health Professions Expo. Unfortunately, they weren't able to come, but even more thankfully, they were able to come and let us download their newest and most updated data and information about their school. There's been some exciting changes specifically around their curriculum that I'm really excited to share with all of our listeners. So if you have any interest in Pitt Med, want to get some insight into how schools think about and approach their curriculum, maybe you're not interested in Pitt, but you're sort of interested in like what schools like to talk about, this is going to be a really great episode for you. So buckle up and get ready. And welcome to the Pre-Health Podcast at Penn State, the show to help all students on their journeys to acceptance. This week, we are thrilled to welcome a guest from the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, Clayton Stoop. Why don't you go ahead and get us started by just introducing yourself?
Well, thanks so much for having me, and thanks so much for listening. As John said, my name is Clayton Stoop. I'm the Director of Special Programs and Recruitment here at the University of Pittsburgh for the Office of Admissions and Financial Aid. Basically, as far as my role goes, I kind of oversee, obviously, with the recruitment portion, but also oversee our linkage program, which is for post-bac students. I work with our Summer Pre-Medical Academic Enrichment Program, which is kind of a pipeline program for underrepresented and disadvantaged students, helping with an early assurance portion of that. I help with our early decision candidates as far as that goes. I also work with our oral and maxillofacial surgery incoming students, helping them get their applications, get everything set up into the School of Medicine. And then I also help out with the guaranteed admit program as well. While I'm also here, I work with our student admissions team. I also work with our student members of our admissions committee. So kind of involved. I've been with the School of Medicine 17 years. Now, when I first came here, I started with our standardized patient program. So they kind of liked ex-teachers to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I kind of got started working with courses that involved medical interviewing, physical exam skills. I then transitioned to taking over being the main administrator for one of our research programs. It's a 5-year research program called the Physician Scientist Training Program. Mm-hmm. So I was with them for about 6 years. And then I've been with the admissions office around 10 years now. So that's kind of my journey to the School of Medicine.
Yeah, you know, when you were listing things, I was like, wow, he really has his like thumb in a lot of jars right now. Yeah. So, you know, for some of our listeners, they might not know as much about sort of Pittsburgh in general, and I know I'm sort of deviating, but like Pitt is not just a medical school, right? You also have a lot of other health professions that are at Pitt. And so you sort of like brought up the maxillofacial program, which is that more of like a residency after dental school?
Correct. So those are students that were primarily in the dental school. Mm-hmm. But in order to get their MD surgery portion, they transition, I believe, in the second year of medical school. So their whole first year is in the dental school.
Yeah.
And then around their second year is when they kind of come over to the medical school and obviously start participating in some of the clerkships, mm-hmm. Things like that. And then they transition back over to the dental school. So
got it. Wow. So it's almost sort of like the students that do like MD, MPH, but it's like mm-hmm. just for cert. Okay. That is really, that's an interesting model and very cool model. So, I think, you know, for a lot of our listeners, even if they're like, well, I don't know that I want to go to Pitt Med, like, I think that they'll benefit from hearing this just in general, because there are other schools that have a lot of other health professions sort of in one place. And so I think as we go along, we'll sort of hear about how those all sort of like play together at some point.
Our dean actually oversees 5 health sciences schools. Mm-hmm. So he's not just the dean of the School of Medicine. He's also the dental, public health, nursing. I'm trying to remember what all the other, what the 5 ones are, but that's primarily what his role is for the health sciences schools.
Yeah. So I, from my perspective, I think that's one of the things that I have always really liked about Pitt. I think there's a lot of things to really like about Pitt, but I like how there is this opportunity to really look at health in an interdisciplinary way. So back to sort of like what we had talked about ahead of time, one of the very first things that I tell students to do when they're sort of exploring or getting to know a school is to look at their curriculum. So if you could sort of get us started in sort of understanding who Pitt Med is, can you talk about some of the curricular highlights that you might want prospective applicants to know about the unique curriculum and training at Pitt Med, any particular areas of concentration they might be able to do, or ways to personalize their education?
Sure. So first off, the one thing I think all your listeners should know is that we totally have changed our entire curriculum model. So the class that just started here in 2023 is the first class to go through this new curriculum. We had a curriculum committee made up of faculty, students, a lot of stakeholders involved with that in the development, brainstorming, researching other medical schools, obviously keeping up to date on new educational practices in medicine and things like that. So we ended up calling this the Three Rivers curriculum, obviously for the Three Rivers of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So as I said, the class that started in 2023 is the first class that is going to be going through all 4 years. The other classes are kind of on the old legacy curriculum.
Yeah.
And so with this new curriculum, one of the things, as I said, the students were kind of a large portion of getting this implemented and designed and things like that. So their suggestions were really instrumental in that. And so one of the things that kind of came out of that was that they wanted to get rid of or move away from lectures and go more towards small group-based, case-based learning. And so that's kind of why this started to develop. And so then they started looking at, you know, well, why should we change, you know, this whole thing? And so obviously they wanted to start implementing best practices within new curriculum, technological advancements. So all the simulations, the computer things that we're able to start integrating into that. You know, they really wanted to find a way to reinforce the concepts that you were learning from the beginning, and kind of as you grow in complexity, as you move throughout the curriculum with all of that. The students also wanted more clinical relevancy within their first 2 years. So instead of just focusing in on the basic sciences, they wanted to have more clinical exposure and why, what they were learning, and how does that implement and go into your actual clinical practice? Why is it meaningful? And so they wanted to do that. Students also wanted a little bit more flexibility. Some time to actually take in everything that they're going through and whatnot. And they obviously throw a lot of information at you all at once. And so it just gives them that time to kind of go through all that. Also, they then wanted to weave kind of more modern thread concepts throughout the curriculum. So social medicine being very important, clinical reasoning, developing you as a physician leader, as a part of that, because of the new healthcare teams, the physician's going to be the head of nurse practitioners, PAs, a lot of people that are involved in the care of a particular patient and whatnot. And then obviously with that, there's a lot of interprofessional interaction. And so they kind of wanted to implement a lot of that stuff. So that was kind of the main reasons for kind of overhauling the entire curriculum. And the way that they kind of built this is it's kind of under three sections. One they call the foundations, which is obviously your basic sciences, your anatomy, things like that. That kind of transitions into the organ systems that you're going to have to learn about. And then throughout that foundations, as I said earlier, they wanted to get a lot more clinical relevance. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the patient-centered care portion of the curriculum, learning interviewing skills, physical exam skills, things like that, testing and procedures to really take care of the patient. So that's kind of the main point. And obviously all of that is kind of guiding you towards taking on the step one exam, all the knowledge and the skills that you're going to need to pass the step one. Then the next part of the curriculum is obviously the clerkship period. So they didn't really change that too much other than move it up a little bit earlier in the curriculum. Okay. So you're starting, I believe, in February. Of your second year, and you're starting your third year, actually that a little bit earlier. And again, it provides you with more clinical relevance, why you're learning what you're learning, how you're able to implement those skills and knowledge out in the field, and things like that. And then once you kind of finish the clerkships, you take your step two examination. And then we have the third part of the curriculum is what we call bridges. If you don't know, Pittsburgh is the city of bridges with all that. And that's kind of why they implemented the name. But within this, all of this is more residency preparation type stuff and things like that. So throughout the first, the foundations portion, as I said, the students wanted a little bit more flexibility with their time and things like that. So they interspersed five, what they call flex weeks. Students have the opportunity to use this time for clinical practice, shadowing, things like that. If they want to work on some type of research, go out in the lab a little bit more. If they just need to take a break, they need for their own mental health, well-being, they have that ability to do that. And then obviously during that time, you could take additional courses, what we call professional enrichment courses, and what used to be our areas of concentration. I knew that was part of your question right there. So the areas of concentration, they're still a part of the curriculum. They've kind of been renamed and kind of reconfigured as to how they're going to actually implement them. So they've kind of renamed them streams. So if you've been to our website or whatever, and you see the term streams, what they're referring to is what was called the old areas of concentration. Again, same, the philosophy is still the same, still allows students to explore a particular area much more in depth. It kind of runs parallel to the core curriculum. So it's outside of the core curriculum with all of that. Right now, what they're planning is having it begin around March of your first year. So I think they're still kind of developing it, see how things are going to be progressing, because the first class that's going to be going through this is just entering that period right now. And so that's kind of what they're doing. But they're, I don't know if you know that the University of Pittsburgh has kind of a moniker called Hail to Pitt, H2P, if you've heard that. Our dean has kind of used that as kind of a catchphrase of our student body and things like that. So he kind of broke the Hail down into four categories, the HB or an acronym for Hail, H being healers, A being advocate, I being innovator, and L being leader. And so within those AOCs, they're kind of building around the three different categories of advocate, innovator, and leadership. So under advocate, you could have like global or population health type courses, things around the underserved communities, maybe around primary care, pediatrics, family medicine, internal medicine, things like that. Innovator could be around entrepreneurship, device development, drug discoveries, things like that. Obviously, research could come into a part of that. And then obviously the leadership portion could be courses around becoming an educator yourself. If you want to teach future in your career at a medical college, university, things like that, but also could be around some of the administrative issues that you're going to have to deal with as a physician and things like that. So that's kind of the way the AOCs, the area of concentration or streams, are starting to progress.
Yeah.
And I know you also said some other ways to kind of personalize your education a little bit more. We also offer what's called professional enrichment courses.
Okay.
So the PECs. Again, this is just another opportunity to further explore a particular area more in depth, grow in that particular area, things like that. Again, these are courses that are outside of the core curriculum. So these might be things that they want to implement in the core curriculum, but for time and space, they just can't quite integrate them. So it just gives you another opportunity to take some of that. Some of these courses kind of help connect the basic sciences that you've been learning with the practice of medicine, things like that. So it's more just practicality, so to speak. They might also expose you to more different types of specialties that you might not be familiar with, or topics that you have. And I know, you know, some of the things that they have current examples of these PECs, culinary medicine, about nutrition, things like that. Obviously, like ophthalmology, plastic surgery, anesthesiology, neurosurgery, any of those could become a part of it. EKG interpretation. So if you're getting into the heart, vascular type, cardiopulmonary, things like that, EKG could become important. They also have various language development. So if you want to brush up on Spanish or Chinese or something else, they have those availability. So it's a wide variety of things, and it just kind of really depends on what it is you want to study more in depth.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of my students are excited to go to medical school, obviously, but they're like, how do I get, it's all well and good to get into medical school, but if, how do I get into like residency? And it sounds like the ways in which Pitt is like intentionally like sort of setting up these different pieces of the curriculum is to enable students to really be able to sell themselves once they get to that residency application. Because a lot of students are very nervous with USMLE having gone to pass-fail, and they're like, well, how exactly do I stand out in a residency application anymore? And these are certainly ways in which you would be able to accomplish that, to really demonstrate your commitment and capacity to take on the challenge of these different residency slots. I'm sure that was very much probably behind a lot of these decisions. Yes. But from my perspective, like sort of guiding students through like how to look at and evaluate a lot of schools, like it's nice to hear that my suspicions are not so nefarious.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So I think one of the sort of hallmarks of a Pitt education is the longitudinal research project. And so I do want to sort of dig in a little bit more. Can you like break this apart for our listeners? Because I think especially for our students that have like some research experience, but not extensive research experience, this can come across very intimidating. And my perception of having students gone to Pitt, many students gone to Pitt, is it's not really that intimidating. It's an I think it should be an exciting thing. And I just want students to understand it more because I think knowledge sort of diffuses a lot of anxiety.
Absolutely. So yeah, as you said, the longitudinal research project is kind of a hallmark of our curriculum and our educational basis, things like that. It is a graduation requirement for our students, so they do have to participate. You kind of mentioned quickly about the application process. Some come in with very extensive research experience. Some come in with very limited, almost no research experience. And kind of throughout the process, you really, or the application process, you really want to demonstrate a willingness to participate in some type of research activity. Okay. And that's where, as you said, it kind of becomes intimidating with all of that. And so the way to just really kind of break it down is that the goals of the research project, it's not about the results that you get. It's more about the process. And that's kind of what they're hoping. So they really want to, throughout this, you know, foster your analytical thinking, the rationale for why you're going to be making certain decisions down the road. And that's kind of part of the basis of this. Obviously, they're trying to teach you about the scientific method, how to develop a hypothesis, but also it gets into, you know, reading critical literature, interpreting those results, things like that. And that's what they're kind of getting through that. With the research project, it also is a way to expand your network. Provides models, mentors, you know, guidance throughout the medical school educational experience and all that. Also, with the conclusion of the research project, so in your fourth year of medical school, we have a research day. So the fourth years are presenting what they've done. And so again, it builds up on your oral and written communication skills as a part of that. So that's also part of the goal with all of that. The research day becomes kind of a networking day, talking to younger classmen. Maybe this is a way for them to piggyback on projects, get an understanding of maybe some projects that might be available, might be coming down the road, things like that. So the whole idea, though, behind the research project, as I said, is not about the results. It's about the whole process. And so they're never going to pigeonhole you into a particular project. The project really depends on what it is you want to study more in depth. So if basic science, clinical, and translational are not your thing, but maybe healthcare policy is, you can certainly do a project in that.
Yeah.
Epidemiology, bioinformatics, bioengineering, maybe a public health issue you want to study more in depth. It really just depends on what it is you want to do. And so what you'll be doing throughout that first year in the curriculum, they have various courses, and I think it's called the evidence and discovery block. So it's a multitude of courses that you're going to participate in with all of that. But obviously, through that process, no matter how much extensive research you have or how limited you have, they're still going to be walking you through the basics, you know, reading biomedical literature, interpreting results, developing a hypothesis. How do you collect, analyze, interpret the data that you get or what you're reading about, things like that. And then obviously evaluating those clinical studies. How are they applicable to clinical settings? What do they mean when they're actually out in practice and things like that? So kind of go through that stuff. They also, during those courses, they're going to introduce you to various PIs, faculty members, to learn about their laboratories, how large, small they are, what type of projects they have available, maybe the grants that they have been awarded, how many people they need to help participate in these types of projects, things like that. They also set up various websites with contact information of faculty, PI, things like that, the projects that are available. Students can obviously network on their own if they want to do that as well. Just kind of depends. They can do that through their advisory dean. We also have in the curriculum, the new curriculum, what they call longitudinal educators. So these are faculty members that are assigned to those particular small groups for a certain amount of time. It might be 3 months or so. So you really get a chance to network with them. You also have clinical preceptors, again, faculty with that. So you can talk to them, especially if you're thinking about a clinical research type of project. And then obviously your fellow classmates are also a part of your network. As I said, the research day earlier, if you go to hear the presentations, see the poster presentations, things like that, you might be able to find a project that interests you, that you can kind of continue, or maybe it gives you a new idea and how to take the project in a different direction or things like that. I will say with the research, the longitudinal research project, our students have been very successful and accomplished. I was just reading the 2023 research booklet that they give out about all the titles of the research projects and things like that. And I was kind of blown away by the number of people. So they ended up submitting 311 manuscripts were published as a part of it for the class of 2023. Wow. 89 manuscripts were already were submitted. So they're still waiting to hear back from them about any edits and things like that. And then they have 101 manuscripts that are ready for submission for publication. So the students did quite a bit of work with all of that and just very accomplished. And so it's knowing when you get here, there is a support system to help you navigate the process. But then once you get immersed into it, I think you really want to see it to fruition. And, you know, publication isn't the graduation requirement. As I said, it's about the process. But I think students find it very helpful with all of that.
Yeah, I think sort of to like go back to the point that I made about the curriculum, there's a lot of very intentional choices here to really be able to build deep, intense relationships. Because again, when you get to residency, one of the biggest things that makes a huge influence are those letters that you receive, right? And if you've had a really wonderful, intense relationship with like one of these faculty members that's helped you longitudinally on this project, the depth and quality of that letter is really going to stand out in comparison to students who are like, well, I had like a 3-week rotation with this person in the area that I want to go into. Right. The look and feel is very, very different. And I think it's one of the things that I really like about Pitt's like sort of approach to the project, is that there is sort of this like mentorship and relationship building put throughout it. You know, the network really cannot be overstated and its importance and how it helps you move on to that next step. Because a lot of students, they sort of stop their thinking at like, okay, well, if I get into Pitt, like I'm done with all my thinking and future planning. It's like, well, no, that's just your new starting line, right? So you have to think about what's the race that you're going to be running when you get to the next place. And Pitt has a lot of those supports built into that part of their race.
Correct. Right. And as you kind of brought up too, within the curriculum, the AOC or the former AOCs or streams mm-hmm. can also be kind of combined with the research project as well. So you're kind of, in a way, killing two birds with one stone, so to speak, if you wish to do that. And I know a lot of our students are kind of using those aspects of their development as kind of advantage or separating themselves, distinguishing themselves in the residency interview process as well. So it's some things to kind of keep in mind as you go through all this.
All right. So I feel like I and our listeners have a good sense of sort of like the curricular aspects of Pitt. And for a lot of my students, they're very community engagement oriented. So I sort of want to like zoom out a little bit and talk a little bit about the Oakland community itself. So for students that don't know, like, yes, the University of Pittsburgh is in Pittsburgh, but like most major cities, there are different communities within that city. And Pitt Med specifically is sort of housed within the Oakland community. What are sort of the major populations that are of concern for Pitt Med? Who are they specifically committed to serving? How do they do that? That's sort of where I want to like shift the conversation to.
Sure, absolutely. And again, it's important in part because if you're going to be living here for 4 years, you're going to be immersed into those communities. The way I can kind of describe, so the Oakland campus where the University of Pittsburgh is, this whole area has now been kind of labeled the Eds and the Meds kind of section. So if you're not familiar with Pittsburgh, the reason for that is when the steel industry kind of collapsed in the mid 80s, so to speak, Pittsburgh really needed to find a way to kind of rebrand, revitalize, rebuild, and all that.
Yeah.
And so everything kind of focused around that with the educational community and the medical community. And so the hub of it became the Oakland area. Oakland is kind of a city within a city. Mm-hmm. So we're down the road from the downtown part of the city of Pittsburgh. So we're about, you know, 5-10 minutes away driving, again, depending on how many lights you hit and whatnot. But it's relatively close. But, you know, just in the Oakland area, I mean, it is a vibrant area. You've got all the educational institutions. You've got Pitt, Carnegie Mellon, Carlo, Chatham, Duquesne University down the street, Point Park in the downtown area, out in the suburbs. You've got Robert Morris and La Roche College. The community colleges are all around. So quite a few higher educational institutions just around this area. And then you've got the UPMC healthcare system, which is primarily focused in the Oakland area. You've got 25 different hospitals as part of the UPMC umbrella. I think 6 of them are right here in the Oakland area. So a lot of variety, a lot of opportunities for your training, things like that. But then also, you know, you've got all the museums that are around here, the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, the Art Museum, the Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens.
So beautiful.
Shenley Park, you know. So there's just a wealth of opportunities, and it really depends on what you want to be a part of. With all that, with the Oakland community. As I said, the downtown area is 10 minutes down the road, all the sports teams, the cultural district. So there's, again, a wide variety. And we've always said that Pittsburgh has that small town feel with all the large city amenities. Mm-hmm. And then, as you pointed out, around the Oakland campus are various neighborhoods, Shadyside, Squirrel Hill, Point Park, Lawrenceville, Bloomfield. Lawrenceville is where our new children's hospital is. So students kind of shuttle there. Again, mm-hmm. it's kind of a 10, 15, 20 minute tops shuttle ride to there. And I know that's where students do some of their training as well. But, you know, you've got a lot of opportunities here. Also, so Allegheny County, which is where the Oakland campus is, downtown Pittsburgh is one of the oldest communities in the nation. So you are going to get a wide variety of healthcare issues as you go through the clinical settings, the hospital settings, and it really kind of helps develop, you know, your understanding of the composition of the population here, as well as how healthcare is kind of changing to meet the needs of those various patients and things like that. So within the community, you know, you're seeing geriatrics, you're seeing patients with limited English proficiency. You're seeing obesity issues, substance abuse, psychiatric conditions, obviously addiction, sports-related injuries, concussions, things like that. And so it just kind of really depends on where you want to focus your particular career goals. Mm-hmm. You're going to have an opportunity to interact with those various types of populations with all of that. So
to sort of like dig into that, like how does Pitt Med specifically engage within the Oakland community, the broader Pittsburgh community? Are there programs, partnerships, initiatives, opportunities, you know, because you talked about interacting with these patients. What do those opportunities look like?
Yep. So a great little segue. So as part of the new Three Rivers curriculum, they've also instituted or implemented two programs to engage within the community. Okay. The first one is what they call the Longitudinal Alliance Program.
Okay.
So in your first year as a first year medical student, you're going to be paired up with a patient out in the community who has a chronic illness, disease, and whatnot. You're going to work with that patient the entire 4 years that you're in medical school. So it becomes kind of, you're an advocate, you're somewhat of a mentor, somebody to talk with. But again, the program is designed to really help you get an understanding of the patient experience, what they go through on a daily basis, the drugs they might have to take, things like that. You could be going to appointments with them. You could be, you know, meeting with them virtually, in person, depending on. Obviously, coming back to one of your faculty mentors that are kind of oversees this to discuss what's happening, what's not happening, ways to help them out, things like that. So it was piloted about 4 years ago, I believe, 4 or 5 years ago. And they kept kind of just seeing what the benefit was of having a medical student matched up with a patient out in the community. And the students, I think, really felt that it was a valuable experience, not only for the patient, but for them to really get that experience of understanding of what they're going through. And how do I apply that into another clinical setting? How do I interact with my new patients? Things like that. The other way that the curriculum committee has developed a program, it's called the Community Alliance Program. And this is where they're going to have you pair up with a particular nonprofit out in the community. So you're going to go out and kind of help support that community or that nonprofit and kind of help solve whatever problems they're trying to accomplish throughout that. So those are two ways that they've built community involvement within the curriculum. Mm-hmm. There are then ways for you outside of the curriculum that can be on your free time. And so we have some programs or healthcare ways for you to deal with underserved populations. So we have the Birmingham Free Clinic that a lot of our students volunteer their time there. Again, this allows them to get more clinical relevance, interaction, patient interactions, things like that. We also have a women's shelter as a part of that. We have Operation Safety Net, so going out and helping with the unhoused, homeless population with any of that, any of their healthcare needs out in the streets. We have street medicine, things like that. We have here on the Oakland campus a kind of a student-run health concierge service. So students volunteer their time there, and this could be where vaccinations, cold, flu, things that are happening out in the community, they can kind of assist with all that. So if they can't go to a MedExpress or any of those urgent care type places and things like that. So there's a multitude of ways that students can kind of become involved within the Oakland community, Pittsburgh community as a whole with all of that. So,
yeah. So I'm thinking about one of my students in particular, who is actually now at PittMed. And the entire reason that she was so passionate about going to PittMed in particular was your sort of background and experience with street medicine.
Yeah.
You know, one of the faculty members she discovered at PittMed was sort of like the person that started the concept and like really started to get the sort of theoretical and research background on the impacts of that. And so she was so thrilled because it was something that she had done all throughout her preparation. And it was just sort of like that confluence of her background and passions and finding the absolute right school. And then, of course, in the interview process, she ended up getting matched with that particular faculty member for an interview. So she about lost her mind in like the best possible way. But I think that's like sort of the magic too of finding the right fit is like when the stars align, the stars align.
Yeah. And that's a great story too. And it's the way that all played out. So,
okay. So, you know, I think we've talked a lot about like sort of the nuts and bolts and sort of like intentional choices that Pitt has made and where it's situated and located. As you think about sort of that endpoint of their time at PittMed, what do you think separates a PittMed graduate from graduates from other schools and programs? And I know that's sort of a tough order to like articulate that, but you know, if our students are trying to see like, okay, what is going to make me different from other applicants in the future, how would you categorize that?
Yeah, so I would go back again to start with the Hail to Pitt. HTP moniker that we have used. And as I said, the H stands for healer, the A stands for advocate, I stands for innovator, and L stands for leadership. And that's kind of the way that our dean is kind of describing our student body and how, as you progress throughout your educational experience, not just the curriculum, but also the things that you'll be involved in, want to participate in, and things like that, that really kind of sets the tone for how our student body is kind of described. I will say that kind of what separates our student body a little bit from some of the other schools, as you can see, I think our students are thoroughly prepared, not only as clinicians, but also researchers as a part of that. The students are supported from day one. They want to see the students succeed. This isn't like undergrad where you're kind of trying to weed out people. Once you get to this level, you know, you are committed and they want to make sure that you get to that end all accomplishment. One of our associate deans during a lot of recruitment events and things like that, he always used to ask applicants, you know, what's the most important day in the life of a medical student? And of course, most students say, oh, graduation. And he would always say, well, no, graduation's more for mom, dad, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, dogs, cats, whatever, whatever. But what you're really working towards is the match, because that now sets the next step in your journey in this process.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it kind of is an eye opener when you start thinking about that, that that's really what you're working for. And a lot of our students, you know, we have done very well with the match service. Our students are getting matched with highly competitive specialties and things like that. So there's, again, a lot of ways that they're doing that to prepare themselves to get to that point. And that's really the most important part in the next step of the journey as you kind of go through there.
Yeah, we just had match day.
Yes, exactly.
Wild. All right. Okay. So to sort of nail in a little bit on, let's assume that all of our listeners are like, oh my gosh, PitMed is the best. I'm definitely going to apply. They've applied. What does communication with PitMed look like during the application cycle? And sort of to provide context to listeners that might not be as educated about this process is that, you know, you will submit your primary application. Everybody does. You receive secondary essays. Pitt has quite a few, but I think they're very well written personally. But what does after that look like? So there are these things called update letters and letters of intent, all of these things. And we have other episodes that are all about that. If you want to learn more about that, go look at those episodes. But in terms of how PitMed views and uses these, what does that look like? What role can they play or should they not play at PitMed?
That's a great question. And as you kind of pointed out, email is primarily the way that we start the communication process during the application phase. Obviously, once we receive your AMCAS application, we send an email telling you that you can now log into our portal, complete our supplemental application. Once that comes in, your MCAT score comes in, your letters of recommendation, all that, the committee reviews everything. Obviously, they're deciding on who they would like to interview. Interview invites go out by email as well. Generally, what we do is we open up our calendar, the interview calendar for the cycle. And if you receive that email invitation, you can log into the portal and schedule your interview whenever you would like. I know other schools kind of do it a little bit differently. And again, it depends on that particular school that you're interested in. But that's kind of the way that we do that. Obviously, we'll communicate with students if the committee has any issues or questions about their prerequisite coursework, things like that. So we'll reach out to students to talk about that. I know students kind of will call us as well to say, hey, will you accept a particular course or whatever? And we usually cannot answer that over the phone. You do have to provide some type of context, some type of syllabus, something about the course so that the admissions committee can kind of review that and get an understanding of what it is that course entailed and does it kind of meet what our curriculum committee wants to see in your prerequisite coursework. Obviously, when the committee makes decisions, we will then send an email saying that your status has changed in our portal. We usually do not send out, you've been admitted, you've been on the wait list. We actually send just a status update. We want you to log into the system to find out what that decision was. Obviously, financial aid information goes out via email to start the process. If we do any spring visits, second look type activities, that also gets communicated via email, things like that. And as we always keep the communication open between the office and the applicant student. So it really just depends on whatever, but we also have the phones available as well. I will say, as far as letters or, you know, updates to your applications, we definitely encourage students to send those to us. Generally, emails, obviously the easiest way. You can either write in the body of the email or you can attach maybe a PDF or a Word document. What'll happen is when we receive that, we upload that to their electronic record and we notify the admissions committee that there's been an update or a change. And then they can go out and review it as depending on how the time frame is and things like that. We also, you know, we encourage students to send additional letters of interest. And again, that kind of helps the committee, you know, coming off the wait list, being admitted, depends, you know, how your interest level in the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, if you truly want to be there. That kind of helps guide them. And especially if there's two applicants that are almost identical, what sways the admissions committee? And it could be that additional letter of interest. You know, with that, we also want the communication to be truthful. We want it to be authentic. We want it to be specific. And again, those things just really help the admissions committee kind of really make those very difficult decisions, because there's a lot of quality applicants out there. And unfortunately, it is a competitive process, and there's just no way to do that. So
for our listeners, just to provide some context here, there are other schools that do not accept any updates whatsoever in their cycle. There are other schools that say you have two updates that you were able to provide. That's it. That's what you've got. And so from my perspective, Pitt is really more on the sort of like, for lack of a better phrase, smoke them if you got them. Sort of end of the spectrum, which is like, if you have something to share that's relevant and important, like, please do that. And there's no real limitation aside from like, I mean, if you're sending something that's not relevant or important, that doesn't really present you very well. So, because there is sort of this feeling of like, well, if I'm overdoing communication, I sort of like burn opportunities that I could use later. And so that's one of the things that I like about Pitt is that's like, no, it's like, if you have something important, like, please share that, because anything can make a difference.
Correct.
All right, cool. So, you know, students are going to pick a school that they find a lot of affinity for, but they, I think they're also, if they're really thinking about it as their new starting line, or thinking about, okay, what does the support look like for those step exams, that next big part of my process, how does Pitt support those students, you know, with those really important pieces of their process? And also, like, what are the supports that are available for, you know, beyond all the networking and connection and opportunity, what is Pitt Med doing to support students applying for residency?
Nope. Great question. And again, very important part, because those milestones either allow you to continue on the trajectory, or it kind of stops or halts for a while. So you definitely want to be as prepared as possible for those licensing examinations. So obviously, in our curriculum and the way we've kind of developed it, the first year and a half is designed to prepare you for the step one exam. That's, you know, the main portion of that. So again, it is a little bit of the networking process, you know, with your learner educators, your clinical preceptors, your other faculty members that you're going to be interacting with. They become an important part in the knowledge and the skills in order to pass that step one. Obviously, a second, third year, your clinical years is getting into the step two portion. And so you're a lot of training around that as well. But as far as support goes here at the University of Pittsburgh, and again, we want to see you pass. We want to see you maintain the accomplishments. We want to see you, you know, progress as you kind of go through this. So throughout the school, we have academic success specialists to kind of help you. So they can help give you study strategies, time management, ways to deal with that, test-taking tips, practice examinations, tutoring if you need it. So those, all those options are available to you if you need them, want them. It just depends, again, where you're going, what you need with all that. We've also established what we call an Office of Learning Environment. And so they're really looking at not only the classrooms, you know, the total educational experience. And this office is kind of comprised of faculty and student groups. So again, if you need help, there's ways for you to communicate with that. And it just depends, again, on what it is you want. This office is also using throughout the curriculum, you know, evaluations, surveys, things like that, to see what's working, what's not working. So the curriculum is always a little bit fluid as well. And so I know with the curriculum committee, you know, they're meeting weekly to go over these things. And if they need to stop, pivot, make a change real quick, they're trying to do that. If there's something that, oh, you know what, that is important. I don't think it's a major priority right now, but it is something that we need to do down the road.
Yeah.
They are trying to implement those types of things. We obviously have various student advocacy groups to kind of help with all the mental health well-being. If you're dealing with life in general, there's definitely resources for all of that. And then obviously the main component is your advisory dean, the person that you're going to be assigned to, who's going to get to know you best on campus, because they're going to be helping with your career trajectory and ultimately your residency preparation, kind of with all of that. So they just become a major part of your network, your support. They are a go-to person. You know, if you're experiencing certain things or whatever within your studies, they can point you in the right direction. This is the group you want to talk to, or this is the person you want to talk to, or this is the person that can get you the assistance or the help that you need through all that. So there is a major support structure. Again, it just depends on what your particular need is, and what help you want with your particular issue.
I think coming from undergrad, a lot of students' sort of base assumption is that, like, once you make it to professional school, like, you're on your own dog. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, coming from Penn State, like, specifically, or really any undergraduate institution, there's lots of, like, support structures available. And I think a lot of the students that I certainly talk to, especially earlier on in sort of like their journeys and who haven't necessarily, like, listened to school sort of information sessions, is like, well, I have to have all this figured out now, because if I don't, like, I'm going to crash and burn because there's nothing to help me there. And it's like, no, there's actually quite a bit there. Like, they want you to succeed just as much as we want you to succeed now. So I think that's, like, a comforting thought to a lot of students. And I hope that students pick up on the fact that the students who utilize a lot of the support services now are performing quite well and often better than their peers. And I would like to assume that the folks that are really taking advantage of all the support structures at Pitt Med perhaps are doing quite well in comparison to their peers.
I would hope so. But I mean, again, what you put into it, what you get out of it, so type of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, take advantage of these things that are available to you. At the very least, they'll help you move forward in a more intentional way. And those are skill sets that you're going to use in the future. A lot of what I do in my preparation for students and learning how to, like, put together their primary application, secondary essays are base skills that I hope that they take with them as they approach residency applications. And I hope, and I know that they're being reinforced by the folks at these schools who are helping them for residency, so that when they go from residency to that first job, they have the base skills to be able to communicate their needs, their passions, their desires in a way that is connective to the individual places that they're applying to. That we've built the skills that they need to be able to do that, and then also use those skills as a practitioner to be able to advocate for their patients, articulate their needs, articulate the needs of their offices, advocate for their communities. Like, these are all the things that, like, I hope in my little old way, in my little old office in University Park, Happy Valley, is sort of like creating those opportunities and changing what the future of healthcare can really look like.
Absolutely. Spot on.
All right. So I think we're sort of like getting to the end of what we have today. Is there anything else that, you know, you from your perspective and sort of like where you sit at Pitt Med would really like our listeners to know about admissions or about the school itself that we haven't already covered?
Yeah, so again, just kind of summarizing a little bit, I know we've talked a little bit about it. As far as, you know, the interest in Pitt Med, all of this entire process is always finding what's going to be a good fit for you.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the most important part. Always keeping that main goal of, if you truly want to be a physician, front and center. And so no matter where you get your medical education, you're most likely going to get a fantastic education through that. But again, finding that particular fit, utilizing, taking advantage of those resources, things like that, that the schools provide, kind of go a long way. You know, as I said, as far as Pittsburgh goes, you know, we're small town feel with all the large city amenities. So when you're looking for that fit, you know, that's kind of could be important to you. We are safe, affordable, low cost of living. If you want to experience all four seasons, we have all that type of stuff. So it just depends, again, with all of that. As far as the School of Medicine goes and our student body, I would say we are a really collaborative environment. I mean, students are involved and invested in almost every aspect of the school. They're serving on the admissions committee. They serve on the curriculum committee. I know they serve on various other committees that are instrumental to the running of the medical school. So they definitely have a vested interest in it. It's not just faculty or administrative driven to all of them. You know, we have global engagement opportunities. So if you want to travel abroad as a part of your experience, you know, that is a part of that. Our affiliation with the UPMC healthcare system provides a wide variety of opportunities for students. Again, that global opportunity, but also clinical and research experiences. If you want to do urban, suburban, rural, they can pretty much make that happen for you. Again, it just depends on what your goals are and what it is you want to ultimately do. You know, we mentioned the research component to us. We also have other more in-depth longitudinal research programs. So if that is something of interest to you, that might be something to explore a little bit more. We obviously have the MSTP, the MD-PhD program. Nationally funded program through the NIH. So again, something to kind of think about. We also have two programs around, one around clinical research, the clinical scientist training program. As I mentioned in my introduction, I was part of the physician scientist training program, the PSTP. That's more around basic science, translational type of research without having to get the PhD portion of it. You know, we have the Dean Summer Research Program. So if you want to get a jump start on your longitudinal research project, it happens the summer after your first year. I know students have traveled abroad to kind of work on a research project. So again, depends on what it is you want to do. We have a new, if you want to obtain your medical degree within 3 years, we have what's called a the PCAT, the Primary Care Accelerated Track. So if you're interested in family medicine, internal medicine, or pediatrics, obtaining your MD degree within 3 years, little tuition savings there, that might be a program of interest to you. Along with that, if you apply to that program, interview, one of the kind of components beyond getting your degree in 3 years is you also have a guaranteed residency spot at one of the UPMC hospitals. So again, something to just kind of think about, throw out there, see what's going to be a good fit for you. And you know, the kind of the last kicker is we have a whole new newly renovated building, student space. So what we call our West Wing, and then our current medical building is going through a rehab as well. So a lot of new new additions here, a lot of new things kind of taking place. So it's kind of exciting. It is a little bit fluid. It is a little bit challenging at times, but I think overall, I think you're going to get one of the best experiences that you can as you go through this experience.
Yeah, I think to sort of like try and summarize up as neatly and cleanly as possible, I think at large institutions, and I certainly get this at Penn State, and you probably get this at Pitt as well, I think it's easy for students to assume that they will be treated like a number. And I hope that students throughout this episode have really picked up on the very intentional ways that Pitt works to make students feel like they're getting a customized experience based on their interests and passions. Because you have sort of like the size and the dynamicism to like accommodate so many different interests, it's not really getting shoved in one particular direction. And so I think a lot of students think that the profile of what makes a good Pitt Med applicant looks one very specific way. And I hope that we've really challenged that notion that I think a good Pitt Med applicant can look a lot of different ways. I think it's about being I think with most medical schools, you want to be passionate about the things that you really care about. I think with Pitt Med, you want to be very curious about trying to solve that problem and be open to doing research that helps you to unveil or discover part of that problem. I think that is sort of one really particularly important element of Pitt Med. I think if you're looking for a school that has a nice blend of like lots of curricular sort of design, but also with this emphasis of being really engaged in your community and the people that you serve, I think Pitt's a really nice intersection of those two things with this interest in wanting to sort of explore these questions that you have. To me, that's sort of like the intersection of Pitt. So if anybody is looking for more information, please reach out to the folks at Pitt Med. They really want you to know about their school, how you can find your home there as a medical school student. So, you know, this great that you've listened to this podcast. If you're interested in Pitt Med, this is not the end of your exploration of this wonderful school. I want to thank, Clayton for your time and your insights. You know, I know I really appreciate it. I know our listeners will really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. This has been a great experience and, getting the word out there and getting an understanding of what's ultimately going to be a good fit for you and what your educational journey could look like.
Exactly. Because it's, even if you just look at the schools within Pennsylvania, the journeys look so different from school to school. Even Absolutely. With things that look very similar, they are very different. All right. So thank you again, Clayton, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in this week for another episode of the Pre-Health Podcast at Penn State. We'll see you next week. The Pre-Health Podcast at Penn State is a production of the Pre-Health Advising Office and the Everly College of Science at Penn State. It is produced, edited, and promoted by the Pre-Health Advising Team. The views, opinions, and advice shared during this podcast are that of the hosts and any guests only, and do not necessarily reflect the best advice for every student at every institution or for every health profession. This is a nonprofit podcast made for the purpose of better serving pre-health students across our university system. Our intro music is This Science from Coma Media, and our outro music is Screening, also by Coma Media.